who run the Tea Party, apparently, was nothing outside of the mainstream. It just wasn't said on debate stages. It's just that Trump is rude. Yes, that's what you do in Web 2.0. You are a minipian, and you have you're a broadcaster. So Trump is the most blatantly quadriphenic, tending towards the pentatic. I mean, he is basically the Android meme. Then Utney Reader says, no, 125, that's the number for the reader, for the poster. Utney Reader from Minnesota. I used to look at that magazine when I would go to Baldwin Health Foods in the 80s. When I lived in Toronto, they had a rack of alternative papers, so I would look at the Utney Reader. And they were like an early version of wimped out ad busters. The magazine was founded in 1984 by Eric Utney as the Utney Reader. Eric Utney chaired the magazine until the late 1990s when his then-wife Nina Rothschild Utney took over. Whoa, interesting point there. I wonder if that's a relative of the financial Rothschilds. Eric Utney is an entrepreneur, publisher, and educator. In 1984, he founded the Utney Reader magazine, quote, a field guide to the emerging culture, which he edited and published for 15 years. And then he became a polished, autonomous yuppie. He had fake community with the Utney Reader for alternative collage of views, and then he got his own little nest egg. And where is he today? Floating around, probably with great magnesium deficiency and suffering the consequences. Minimax says that Frank was a small business owner, also known as petty bourgeois, which is fundamentally right-leaning. My communist friend would say, yes, communists and right-wingers are in the 19th century in the world before World War II, to be kind. Everybody today is a communist, is a right-winger, is an anarchist, is a spiritualist, and is a I-Night devotee, unwittingly by default. You match the five bodies with these ideologies. And so everybody is a five-bodied participant. And you are, Wyndham Lewis nailed it, 1929. I'm part fascist, part communist, part monarchist, and part anarchist, but with a healthy passion for order. That describes everybody, even the happy people on welfare. You can't live without your five bodies. You are actually living them. And so you can put up political categories with each one. So Frank was a quadriphenic. He didn't make any sense to the right wing or to the left wing or to the anarchists or to the monarchists or to the paganists or to the ecologists. He was quadriphenic. He was a satellite conductor just being appreciated today, just beginning to be perceived. Paige White says, the talk about hacktivism reminded me of intactivism for some reason, Bob. Then Minimax goes, note the time, motherfuckers. Well, what do you mean? We don't have to note any time. So that confuses 224, who goes, which time, where? Then Minimax says, John Wayne. So is that what Trump is, John Wayne? At the end of your chart 2020, Trina, what then? Will you extend your chart? Well, years ago, 25 years ago on CKLN, people asked me, what happens after lockdown Bob Rule, which leads up to 2020? And I said back then, war breaks out between me and the Church of the Subgenius. So I think that needs to be updated. Basically, there won't be that many people on the planet in 2021. Let's start with that. There won't be many people on the planet. And that's a loaded statement. Will you extend your chart? I would say to the degree that you become aware of what we're doing would come after 2020. As you get more informed of what is happening in Eindhoven and more can be revealed, that would be moving towards the SEPTAD, SEPTAD, the seventh level, because we're in the hexadic, which is the I-cell virulently everywhere on the planet, and ion surfing it and us keeping up with it. That is what we're in right now. And I would say that goes up to 2020 because the chart is about an advertisement for the hexad. The septad, and we haven't got much from ion on the septad, but it would be a different level of transparency after 2020. Okay, so then 125 says, Utney is a member of the Executive Committee of the Nobel Peace Prize Forum and the advisory boards of EcoTrust and the World Future Council. He's basically working for the Bolsheviks. He has a BED, Environmental Design, from, see that, Eco-Fascist, from the University of Minnesota. Minnesota, there's the communist Bolshevik outlet. Jeez, see? These things got into health food stores because the Bolsheviks took over the alternative distribution networks for health stores. And serves as senior fellow at the University Center for Spirituality and Healing. The father of four sons, he lives in Minneapolis. This guy is a probably a Russian. He's no, that's why he's married to a Rothschild. Remember, the Rothschilds funded the Bolsheviks 100 years ago. And then Minimax says, note the time that Bob had uttered a sample-worthy definition of his position. Note the time that Bob had uttered a sample-worthy, oh yeah, that what I just said. Yeah, note the time, Carolyn. What did I say that 5 minutes ago? You know, that neat description of what I am? That was at, say, 7 o'clock, which would
during
be...
During the break, and it probably got...
Probably got deleted. It was said during the break at the turn of the hour. But they don't. Not much gets deleted. So we started at 3, so it's the end of the... It's the 4th, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, 6 to 7. So going into the 5th hour is when it happened. All right? For those that want to note the time of that awesome statement, thanks, thanks for pointing that out there, Minimax. I had not realized myself and what I had said as usable. And then 125 says, Utney is a Bolshevik who married a Rothschild? Well, yeah, well, his wife has the name Rothschild in it. Most the Bolshevik is quadriphenic. He supports the right, left, center, spiritual, the whole range of human chemical body obsolescence. And then Minimax is just before I said that. I don't know what that was. You mean looking at John Wayne? You go back when he... Which time? Oh, yeah. Note the time. So he has 8:55:15, Carolyn. Mm. So that is... That's bill time.
So 5 minutes before the hour.
And that would be before 9, and that would be before 7, because we're just 2 hours from there. So, right. We got the time down. All right. Okay, moving along here. John Wayne as the fourth quadrant of Trump's... Now, here's Minimax. John Wayne as the fourth quadrant of Trump's image retrieval vortex with Limbaugh, Arnold, and H. Ross Perot. Okay, John Wayne is the fourth. Now, okay, so then the fifth would have to be the Barbara Walters, Minimax. But you're saying Trump is the image retrieval vortex. Okay, John Wayne... Not bad. Note the time, motherfuckers, is from a Dave Chappelle sketch. Okay. I know. I've heard of him, Dave Chappelle. Don't know much right now. Isn't he a black comedian? I think he is. Dave Chappelle. Yeah. What, he would yell out, note the time, after he said something significant? See, Minimax has more pop culture awareness in the TV land, Phil, zone than I do, because he has nothing else but to do what do nothing to do but to watch TV, at least have the time to do it, since he's quite free. L Truth, it was approximately 5 to 6 minutes before the hour, according to Minimax's timestamp. Yeah, we figured it out. Then Minimax is screaming out the window naked to establish an alibi. That about yourself, Minimax? You're screaming out the window naked to establish an alibi. That could be a poetic statement. That could be applied to Trump, to anybody who's running for president. Okay, so that we're up to date on that. Thanks for those notes. Let's see if anybody wants to speak. We got Unknown. We got Sean and Renee. Does anybody there have anything to say before we end this portion and go to the Zappa part of the program? Anybody want to say something? Did you enjoy the review of the chat line, Eliza? Was that... up your alley?
I did. That was very entertaining.
And evoked some good thoughts for me and Carolyn. Some good musical fodder. Oh, that's Renee there, right? Renee?
No, that's Eliza.
Oh, it sounded like Renee there for a second.
Uh-oh.
No?
It did not. Should I repeat it? I said it did.
Oh, yeah. Well, it sounded like Renee to me, your tone. But what would I know, eh? I'm here too busy creating to matching with reality. I don't have to match, perceive what the consensus sees. I'm making. I'm in the autonomous Rumpelstiltskin position.
Hi, Bob.
So there it is. What? Who said something?
Oh, you can hear me?
Oh, Madeline. Hey, Madeline, you have something to say?
Whoa, I don't understand how you're hearing me, because I actually am not. Does it sound like I'm on speakerphone? Do I sound
sort
okay?
Sort of, yes.
Yeah, kind of.
You're a bit low, but you're audible.
How about now?
That's
Is that
louder.
Better? I'm sorry for
Sounds
all
better.
That. Okay. So I was struck by one thing way back when Carolyn was, you guys were reviewing the Carolyn Quirton book. When
yes.
She pointed out that the digital, well, not the hacktivism part, but all the furor that's online over everything was like the gladiators. It's just, well, she said siphoning energy, but I felt like it's, well, I suppose it is. It's, well, just a place for people to vent where it's ineffective.
Okay, so when Carol says it's siphoning energy, that's from a chemical body position. The chip body gives people energy. I mean, they get to express themselves and argue and bitch and get rid of all the sugar poisons in themselves that makes them, the adrenaline go. It expresses things. So,
when you're in the chip body format, you're sitting around like a lump. You keep running to the fridge to get another carb hit because it's like your mind is all activated and you are burning off sugar because your sugar is most utilized by your brain, so you have to keep eating. So you're
distracting from your health.
Yeah.
That's what you mean. But you also meant politically. It's a big distraction politically, but there's nowhere to go politically. Where are you going to go?
Right. Well, exactly. I think that's kind of the idea, is that you're not going anywhere and doing anything. You're sitting in your little chair.
Right.
Venting away.
But then if you click on some sort of, you know, what they call it, some activism thing to...
Sign a petition?
Petitions. I don't even know what they are. Yeah. If you click one little click second to sign a petition, you think you're doing something. And that's another mistake. So they give you these little options.
That's where the Android meme makes you think you're in power.
Right, exactly. And it was really interesting that you pointed out how everybody knows, you know, all this stuff is bad for you. It's all over the Internet, and it doesn't change a damn thing. I really loved that section.
You what? You love that section?
Yeah, that we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did.
Okay, a basic definition of the Android meme is that it killed flesh. The humans are gone. And that's why the guff can come forth and speak. You know, the fact that Ayn showed up, which is such a dramatic thing when you understand it, you can get that could happen now when you understand Bob knowledge, Finnegan's Wake, Coker, McLuhan and all that, and Zappa, and understand how flesh is gone. That video from 1992, everything's disappeared. When you deeply see that, that's how far, we're way beyond biblical apocalypse or Armageddon. We're beyond any horrifying scenario when, you know, it's not even possible to be a human being anymore. That's why Ayn can show up. See, that supports, when you understand where we are, really see the present over the last 20, 30 years, no wonder the Goff had to come forth. You see, it explains why the timing of it and why the Guff showed up with me, because I was one of the few people, I've been saying for 25 years, that understood where we were. Right? Okay, so the Android meme then, for 20 years the Android meme said, we don't want these humans to really realize how gone they are, so we are going to give them their own autonomy. It's going to be a digital autonomy, and information is going to be free, and you'll there with your Web 1.0 have access to everything and inflame your mind, and you'll think you're in a new utopia. And you saw the way people went nuts, you know, with Windows 95 in 1995, when people were so panically needed to have a chip body and went for it. That was even predicted by Paul Shockley, the shoddy cosmic awareness medium who took over after Dave Worster. He actually predicted that the Illuminati, he said this in the late 70s, early 80s, would dump all this new technology on people, this amazing technology that would just, you know, stun humans and keep them distracted and occupied and stuck in uselessness. That's a general, I would give him credit for predicting the digital chip body, you know what I mean? And other people did too, but he did say that, and he said it very early, and that's what happened. They just dumped an after image of technology on people, because the Android meme only lasted till 1990. People are getting the after image of the Android meme starting in 95. And this is the fallacy of Steve Jobs and Gates and Paul Allen not talking about this, not admitting it, and not looking clearly at what they were part of, what they helped stimulate. So you are in Web 2.0, it's even further. You're not only having access to information, you can start broadcasting your damn fallacies to everybody. Tweeting and Instagram, you're projecting all of the global media of the first half of the 20th century. Now you do it personally. Now how's that for candy? How's that for you to get lost in what you think is called communication? And that's what Madeline sees. She gets what I'm saying here. That's why she's rather cynical about anything she hears or does or sees. She knows that all her fellow humans are faking it, being human. Right, Madeline?
Well, I'm still coming to grasp the not being human part. This definitely moved me forward. It definitely helped.
The conversation tonight?
Yeah, especially, particularly sure. that bit. Sometimes there's no humans.
Yes, the Android meme in general is shrinking and making the human think that they're coming back. And for the young kids, they love technology, they love the Android meme because it's made them super powerful in conventional terms. They know major information environments bigger than them. And they create the Justin Bieber phenomenon. The fans do all kinds of things. And they probably think they influence politics. So, which is old industrial systems, the Android meme has really won over the Morpheus generation in celebrating getting their power back in mediated terms by default. They don't see the default part. But this has been going on for 10 years, so I think we ran our course, and Ian is here to point out, uh-oh, you people are really in trouble now. You've had your day. You've had your cake and ate it. Now, breast cancer at the age of 13 is your future. What's good about Guertin's book, Madeline, is the good writer. It's describing the Android meme, as it will in later editions. We'll get into to her really good description of what I call quadrophenia. And so because she's doing a good, pretty up-to-date statement, that allows us to go around what you're saying and push it further. And then that's why you can get insights about this, because her pretty accurate statements of the present and the dilemma of the present for human communication can lead to great statements for me and Carolyn that you guys can learn from. You see? You get that, Madeline?
Yes, I appreciate
something about the Android meme. Bob, I know you've said this many times before, but what's the agenda of the Android meme for distracting us, for distracting humans?
I think the Android meme is the power of language that humans have. And the Android meme, at the time humans retrieve their sovereignty or godhead or transcension, language, which was the fallen communicatory medium, has a supernova. That means when a star dies, it's the most brilliant part of it. So the world of language and its extensions have a supernova of thinking is taking on a life of its own as ion threatens its very being. So the Android meme thinks that it's taking over, and it's not. It is taking over from the chemical body, but ion has come in to alter that and not retrieve the chemical body, not retrieve the anthropomorphic physical, to retrieve a situation beyond the anthropomorphic physical, which is not human. So ion includes the post-human devastation that the android meme creates for the chemical body, but it goes beyond the android meme as a service beyond that. Does that make sense? So the android meme is celebrating its linguistic nature. It's, remember, the angels got mad that humans could make language. They couldn't. So humans had the ability to make their own worlds as opposed to a given world, but I don't make that division anymore once Ion clarified some points. But I used to make the division between first nature and second nature. So I would say second nature blossoms as the android meme, and it looks more and more merged with first nature. But Ion would not make those distinctions. All of creation is nature, technical or greeny or herbal or animal. So that communication, that which we created in the fallen condition, is in a panic condition because we don't know how much we're going to tolerate of it in the new situation of Iondom. If Dave Wurster asked this question in 1993 when I was visiting him in L.A., he said to me and Carolyn that Rai created man, but when Rai returned to essence, we don't know how much of man that a Rai created out of separateness will be left. Will any of man, humankind, be left? That was the question Dave had. So Rai was the principality of the fallen condition. It created the world of language and communication. Will any of it stay? That's to be seen. Maybe that's what happens after 2020. That gets answered. So very profound.
So man will become God.
We're not God. We're going to become post-God. God is a limited image. You're going to be able to become a rattlesnake. You're going to be able to become any form you want. Is that God? Maybe. But it won't be a handsome Deepak Chakra God, or you won't look like Robert Redford. You won't be limited to that. You won't look like Justin Bieber. Who do you admire? Who do you want to look like, Madeline? Who's your Godhead image? Marlon Brando or
me with better skin?
Why are you naming men's names?
Well, because I'm talking to women. There's always a manipulative level going on here. Remember that. You should have said, we know why Bob's saying men. And you should have picked a woman. Whoever you're going to pick, what human form, human anthropomorphic form, would you want to be if you thought you were God?
An iguana.
Well,
who cares?
Who?
What, iguana?
Isn't
that shit? Or is that
no,
iguana?
No, iguana is an animal.
That's the thing, though. You don't have to pick one,
what's
do you?
Iguana, Carol?
You can, it's a reptile. A lizard.
Oh, yeah, no, we're talking about
a
human form.
How do we know what's human in post-human society?
Oh, that's what I mean.
When
people use the word God, that's a limiting concept because they're basically going to think of themselves as some kind of advanced human, not an iguana.
You don't know that, Bob.
Oh, well, you mean the Indians? They talk about the big turtle holds up Earth. That's their image of God, a turtle?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the Aboriginal cultures might be closer to understanding the multiple forms.
Yeah.
But when you say God, Eliza, you know, what do you think that is? What does it look like to you?
Ascended being.
Well, what's it look like? White light?
I can't. In regards to the way it looks, it's unlimited. It could look like anything, morph into anything, have any form it wants.
Oh, okay, so, all right. So could you come up with another word than God, or are you going to stick with God?
Transcendental being?
Shapeshifter.
Yeah. Yeah. Shapeshifter. Well, I ain't going for any term. That's the best way. Leave it open. Ready
TBD.
For more.
We'll call it TBD.
TBGB? What?
TBD. TBD. To be determined.
Oh, to be determined. TBD. Okay. All right. All right. Well, and hopefully it won't be a condition of being determined. You know, you don't want to be limited, but we understand what you mean. Oh, is there more there? I'm going over the chat line, people. I have to walk it to where the computer is. L2 says, Trump's fourth quadrant, Jabba the Hutt. I used to call that Quark Tunes. You take the Quark level of human existence and under digital reality and merge it with the cartoon. You come up with a Quark Tune. So, yes, Jabba the Hutt is a Quark Tune. 125 says, ha, ha, out. They like that. And Minimax puts on a bright light. So Jabba the Hutt, tell me about him. Isn't he a giraffe-looking kind of wizard, lizard? A lizard-like with a long neck or something?
Makes me think of the Jabberwocky.
Yeah, but Jabba the Hutt is a character from Star Wars or something, right?
Yeah, you're thinking of Jar Jar Binks. Jabba the Hutt is this giant blob, this disgusting, oozing sort of blob.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. And I'm thinking of the other J thing, Jabba Links or something.
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, he's the one that has a long neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one has no neck.
Right.
This is a blob?
It doesn't have a neck.
It's a blob?
Yep, it's a blob.
Yes.
Jabba the Hutt was one of the galaxy's most powerful gangsters with far-reaching influence in both politics and criminal underworld. Like Trump. Star Wars.
That sounds like J.W., or one of the JWs. So what, Jabba the Hutt, okay. Empress says, I think that's our daughter, right, Carol? Our foster daughter, Empress, says, God, creator, divine. No, Shannon, those are limited words. Those are words that someone who never went to college would come up with. That's the problem there. You wouldn't want to use God, creator, divine. These have been polluted, like the word love. They don't have any resonance anymore. That's what we're trying to come up with. If you knew what Jabba the Hutt was, that is what Ion says, you know. Become like Jabba the Hutt. Become this huge empire-building asshole. That's what the sovereign gods are. Hitler was on the right path for a couple minutes. Then he got lost in bureaucratic running of a nation. See, he got screwed up by dropping back down to becoming a national leader, and then he got sucked into authoritative issues, whereas on his first impulses, he was trying to become an emperor on a huge level, and he was cut off at the kneecaps. So is Empress going to stand corrected? What do you think, Empress? Am I challenging your... And then she says, how can creator be limited? Well, you'd be surprised. You'll hear Donald Trump saying, we need a new America where everybody can be creator. I mean, the Android meme uses that word. Commercials use that word. It's not valid anymore. You would not use any word in English to name what you are. We are beyond linguistic categorizing. That's what my chart is. You would look like my chart. That's what that chart means on one level. That's a portrait of the God, incorporating the new extensions started off by Elvis Presley. If you listen to Ion's comment on Elvis Presley in the first recorded things on howionic.com, we did after a couple months, we did like 11 topics. One of them was on Elvis. And Ion pointed out that Elvis added new elements to the universe. maybe because it was an electronic phenomenon. So note that, Empress, we don't use English in describing your transcension. Don't use any verbal language. You use sign languages, hand signals for the blind, like my chart. All right? You hold up your chart. Someone told me to look at leftovers. And in leftovers, I'm finding hard to stay interested in it, but the fallen people, the screwed up people, they don't say things. They write out stuff on pads, and they flash statements to each other by notepad. Some kind of agreement has happened. That's what you would do. You would flash Bob's chart. That's the new sign language. And then the 224, if Ion already pulled the plug, then I made it. Yeah, me. That's right. If you're here, you made it. It's the good news. And then Altruth comes in, pulled what plug? There's always someone a step behind. Stay tuned, Altruth, for that one. But I think we're going to have to end this portion. What do you think, people? Can you handle that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you handle being muted again? Everybody said, oh, here's unknown. Or maybe Sean, do you want to say something? Sean has nothing to say.
Hi, Bob.
So remember, we are... Yes.
Yeah, it's all good. I got that book you said I must get last time, and it all ties in with all the stuff you're discussing. Very good.
What book is that?
The one, the post-human one.
Ah, Catherine Hales.
Yeah.
How we became
post-human. I'm struggling
post-human.
A bit with the English, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, there's a lot of big words in there. And you don't think you have to rush through it. It might take you a year to read it and understand it, because she's going to go through the history of the Macy conferences, and I think that it's in that book, the history of the language that the computer technocrats developed since the 40s. You know, she's going to go through various phases. So it's a lot.
Yeah, I like it, though, because it builds a nice background of how it all started for me to put it all together in my
right.
head in any way.
Yeah, in a way, it's a history of the creation of the Android meme. At least
I'm intrigued by things like how we can apply to what we're doing now and learning from Ion. And would it be useful to ask questions like if these, not by our autonomic response, but this consciousness that they claim they could put in a machine, the words that come out there, does it have the same effect as when we as creators speak those words? Which
that's a really good question.
Believe
for
it
Ion.
Won't do.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Good.
It's hard to tell what how you say powerful words, because if you put semantic meaning into it or desire, that gets into social mortar issues. You're supposed to say it almost technically. It's done. It's a done deal. You know, money comes freely and easily to me. You're supposed to say it as a fact, not as a desire. So if a computer is talking, are they speaking from desire? That would be the question. But, yeah, that's a very good question for Ion. Let's everybody remember that.
Oh,
as Ion comes back, that'll be the first question. Are robots going to be able to create like humans did with their language? Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
Thank
I'm sure
you.
Zappa wrestled with that. We're going to find out that Frank did dealt with that. Okay, thanks a lot, Sean. I'm glad you're grabbing a book and reading it. Note that, people. She's going to be way ahead of you guys. She's already come up with the top question for Ion when he comes back just by looking at the book. So note that, people. You want to get how he became post-human. There was a reason I was reading it. At the moment the 911 happened. Good reason. That was on page 222 also. So let that be a lesson to all those that are willing to hear, those that have autonomic systems that can respond. It's no longer count those that have ears to hear, those that have eyes to see. No, it doesn't exist anymore. It's just you're just basically proprioceptive autonomic speed processes. So those who have an autonomic system that's working, it's indicated by your reception to this book idea. Thank you, Sean, for pushing me to a new statement that had never been said before.
Cheers, Bob.
Okay, I'm going to play some music and set up for the Zappa program. What Zappa song would you like to hear, Carol? What could we play? Well,
Illinois Enema Bandit?
Yes, but what's his name? Jim Bob requested an early Zappa. So I'd have to go over to our iTunes and find something that they could dig. Let's see. And then broadcast it through our system here.
Changa's Revenge.
No, we've done that. We're supposed to go to the first three albums. He requested something from the first three albums. So I must find them. Cruising, Freak Out, there's Freak Out. So we'll begin with Who Are the Brain Police? That could be a good one. Okay, that's one that Frank, even when we interviewed him in 1988, he hadn't come to an answer yet. He said he hadn't really made a decision on that point. So we bring up Soundflower. We bring up the volume. We make sure we're not on that. And mute everybody. Mute. Web control.
All participants are now muted.
Mr. Navik, can I ask you this? Where did McLuhan come from intellectually? He said, I think, that he was at heart a 19th century man. Was he a classical scholar? What was his early academic background?
Well, I can only tell you, of course, secondhand, because I wasn't there. But on the other hand, we shared, as I say, so much together, and I owe so much to him in this context that I can, and as being a 19th century man myself, I share this with him. I think I would say that Marshall, while he is a 19th century man, necessarily all of us who were brought up in that time were, the thing that he liked to think about himself as was as a medieval man. That is, a man who was not seeking logical maturity, which is the ideal of the academic establishment and the computernik, who can do better than ever what need never be done at all. He wasn't seeking to dispose of the or get rid of the paradoxes of existence, but to savor them with human maturity. That is, human maturity, he felt, had been wiped out by science, that art always preceded science, that percepts, the direct human encounter with existence itself, always preceded concepts and models, which were packages, if you like, of percepts put together as convenient software tools, which were then imposed upon existence by people who used them. Now, Marshall was constantly trying to perceive the world in its own terms, by using the concepts, by using his 19th century background, if you like, to probe existence and at the same time retrieving this human maturity which came from such people as the pre-Socratic Greeks, Heraclitus, if you like, as an example. It came from the rhetoricians, largely. He was interested in rhetoric because it always started with the audience. And if you will notice that his work in Cambridge started with Leavis, who concentrated on the effects of books on audiences. Marshall devoted his life to studying the human effects of technical media, that is, the extensions of man. Everything that we invented, as he learned from Harold Innes, was a communication medium.
Perhaps we should talk more about Innes. We have a quote here of McLuhan talking about Innes's influence on his career. Let's listen to it, and then we could perhaps go on to talk about some other people who shaped McLuhan's development.
Certainly.
I certainly consider myself a follower of Harold Innes, although I have hardly the right to claim that distinction, since I didn't work with him or as a student of his over the years he was alive. I came as one out of due time. But Mechanical Brown came out in 1951. I heard that Innes had put my book, fair new book then, on his reading list for his students. And I at once said, well, if he is prepared to do that, it's time I read something of Harold Innes. And at that time, I had not read one page of Harold Innes. I was absolutely won over at once. I think he had discovered an absolutely indispensable method of study. But I think that the ordinary academic is still in that 19th century pattern of the point of view, the hypothesis, checking the hypothesis against outside evidence, instead of studying the process from the inside.
Dr. Culkin, could you tell us how original a thinker was McLuhan, or were there other people you might like to mention whose thought McLuhan synthesized and re-examined and re-put forth?
Well, Marshall was always generous in acknowledging his colleagues and those to whom he was intellectually indebted, as we just heard with the Innes interview. Certainly at the time when Explorations magazine was the printed probe into this new culture, he was working closely with Dr. Edmund Carpenter, the anthropologist, with Dorothy Lee, and with a number of other people. Of course, he always acknowledged his debt to James Joyce and the poets. But it's an organic thing. One cannot snip out passages from any of these people or from any of the books that Marshall was influenced by and paste them together and create McLuhan. He was an original. He synthesized and moved forward in ways that is not directly traceable to his antecedents. And I think that this is his uniqueness. I don't really believe we read him for the first time yet. I think...
can't happen here. It can't happen here. I'm telling you, my dear, that it can happen here. Because I've been checking it out, baby. I checked it out a couple of times. Oh, darling, it's important that you believe me, bop, 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 that it can't happen here. Who could imagine that there was freak out somewhere in Kansas,
Kansas,
la la. Imagine that they would freak out in Minnesota, mama Minnesota, mama Minnesota, mama Minnesota, mama Minnesota, mama Minnesota, out in Washington, D.C.
A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop, A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop, A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop, A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop, A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop,
A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop,
A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop, A-C-D-C, ba-ba-bop. I'm not worried at all, I'm not worried at all.
Folks, you know it won't happen here.
No, no, no. No, no, no. No, no, no. No, no, no. Ba-ba.
I remember, they had a swimming pool.
And they thought it couldn't happen here.
Just got to town, and we've been very interested in your development.
Forget it.
It can't happen here.
Myself a thousand times to try and find
Okay, here we are. Roxana, are you with us? Can you hear me?
Yes, magnitude. The fourlings are here. Hello, fourlings.
That's F-O-U-R, fourlings. F-O-U-R rather than F-O-R-C-E, lings.
Yeah, the members of the fourth field.
Right. Now, here's the thing. What we were just listening to from the Freak It album started to be recorded in late 65, early 66. So we're coming up to December 2015. That's 50 years ago. What we just heard was done 50 years ago.
Today I was going through the list of the 179 names of Zappa's influences.
Yeah. Right.
And, I recognize it. Wonderful way to start by freaking out everybody.
Or abuse
is what
the Android meme supports.
Mysterious, obscure Italian composer, Francesco Zappa. We know your secret. Yeah.
That's right, we do know, and we're going to go into that. That's part of this book that Frank put out in 1984 called Them or Us. But back to this point, so on that, the voices we just heard doing Help, I'm a Rock, and that's after McLuhan is pointing out, and Barry Nevitt and McLuhan were quoted before, you know, in that little interval. It was a CBC program on right after McLuhan died in last day of 1980, and Barry Nevitt, his buddy, went on CBC, and that was Barrington Nevitt talking first, and then Culkin from his early days at Fordham, like 20 years before, no, only 15 years before, Culkin and Barry Nevitt were probably the closest to people. You know, Culkin and McLuhan's earlier career, Nevitt in the later part of the career, so they're explaining Marshall. And then I would come in and explain that they're pointing to the Everything's Disappeared for the Chemical Body. So then it's appropriate to play Help, I'm a Rock. You are reduced to rock status, mineral status, under angelic, discarnate, super angelic conditions. So it was appropriate to have that just before Frank spelled it out very humorously. But one of the voices on there is Carl Franzoni, who was the Vito's right-hand man in the Freaks, the Dancing Freaks. Remember, this freak out is an expression of what Frank saw in Vito and his anarchistic dancers who were changed. But that takes up a big chunk. Then chapter 8 is more Hunch and Toot. and then... chapter 9 is Shemp and Francesco. Back to Shemp and Francesco. There's 11 chapters, so we get back into the Broadway play. We began with Shemp and Francesco. So
yeah,
they get back to Harry and Rhonda, which we heard a bit of on playing some Thingfish. So it's going to come nicely back to Frank trying to get this stuff on Broadway. And it's 5 o'clock, Bert. Doesn't it like the Cinderella thing, you turn into a pumpkin or something?
Yeah.
He turns into the hunchitude.
Yes. Hunch, and hunchitude means you hunch and then toot on the harmonica. You know, like a fake white boy doing blues harmonica. They hunch and then toot. That's what the word means. Hunch and toot. And in the early 70s, Frank is complaining about everybody celebrating B.B. King and all these boring blues cliches, while he's composing the completion of all ear experience, acoustic space.
Yeah.
The auditory imagination, I quote T.S. Eliot at the Zappanelli. So we went, I don't know, 5 or 6 fucking hours, man. That was quite a stretch and very well done by all of us. We did a good job.
5 hours of crunchitude.
And there's more to come.
Yes.
More to come.
Yes, we've got to do another 5 or 6 hours to finish the book.
Thank you for making this large-scale absurdity possible.
That's what Ion is. Yes, a tiny and yet large-scale, side-scale. Ion's a tetrad in action. Ion extends, obsolescence retrieves, and flips into the opposite.
And...
But then you have to explain why the tetrad is dead.
Yes, we will. I'm sure Frank will help me. It'll be inspired by, I said, before I get into the tetrad, we got to get into the book. So the book will push me to that with its absurdities. So we can look forward to that next week.
Yeah.
And the unusual behavior of the Bob.
Yeah.
You just said the unusual behavior of the Bob?
No, the usual behavior.
Oh, the usual, yeah, the ritual. A souvenir from a ritual in progress.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a long, it's a 100-year-long evocation, a ritual of evocation, which worked. A chanting, and then Ion showed up, and Frank and all the greats were knew in their own expressions by default what was coming. But that's a good summation, yes. If Ian did show up, we would have had these, even Moon would have blown up. Moon unit. Okay, so I now have to play the last part, the last hour and a half of rewrite number 41. So you can, guys, well, Bert won't be here, but if you want to come back later to talk, Roxy will be here. Okay.
And remember, since I drop off, just
yes.
Check.
You mean you drop off and sleep, or what?
No. Sometimes you ask, are you there?
Oh, yes. I have to look at the bottom. Yeah, I have to look at the bottom of the template here. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go to... sorry we excluded other people, but this is a special gourmet portion of the program we create with the experts, Bert and Roxy.
Oh,
they worked their ways up from the bottom like Billy Sweeney when he was a janitor in the plant that was shut down in Happy Valley.
Yes,
they
it's
worked
like
their ways up
Bob
from...
Bob calls around 2 in the morning, and he's like, take your loss of media page... I don't know what. And he's talking about and teenage donkey and I don't know what. And I'm like, okay, yes.
Did you say Bob calls you at 2 in the morning? Is that what you said?
Yes.
And then you were talking about these very complex things in the tetrads. And I'm like, okay, I have to read the book. I don't know why, but.
Yeah,
I understood. Oh,
yeah, I brought the lost media, so she realized how great it was, and she's been taking it to work all week, reading at work. There's not much to do at work, so she's studying tetrad lost media, getting paid for it.
Perfect.
Yeah, and you did a good intro, Roxy. Your didactic professorial statement of the importance of Zappa and Bob and McLuhan at the beginning, 5-6 hours ago, was well done. What'd you say, Bert?
No, she's done a great job with her musical background and her comment and interacting with you. It's really a great synopsis of what this is. I'm amazed.
And all
this,
of that.
I'm amazed at this book of us and them, of them and us, and how everything.
It's them or
made.
Us. Them or
them
us.
Or us.
Yeah. It's a survival yell. You know, it's either them or us. Who's going to make it? You know. But you're amazed at this book, yeah. And what was it? I just know that, you know, this is going to be 5 or 6 hours. It'll be added to the 40 hours we're already done. You just know that millions of Zappa fans will start listening, and about the second hour, they'll start to notice there's something fishy going on here. Bob's hijacking Frank. And this is a fraudulent production probably done by Alan and Harry and Rhonda. And they will not listen to the rest, and they're going to miss all this great stuff that is a really great explanation of what Frank does. It's so powerful, half of the people didn't live enough to hear it. Right? They didn't live, they didn't survive to get here to hear it.
Yes, but some will join the Forcelings.
Yes, they will be new. The ranks will swell by those that deserve knowing about it and understanding.
Right.
Yes.
Now look at Frank. He's holding a green glove on the cover of this. What is my color in the chart? Green. That's his version of Bob. He's holding up this little glove. That's his symbol for me. Beautiful green glove.
Yes. What's the quote in the Finnegan's Wake? The hand holding the
hand
chart.
The chart. Yes, that's like at page 593, you know, the beginning of the last section. The hand puts forth the chart.
Yeah.
We can bring that up someday. But, okay, so that's it. I'm going to mute everybody, and we're going to play, what's his name? Who was that guy? Ion. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we like Ion.
Yes. Okay, Bert, thanks for contributing.